Last week, property owners near Hoytsville met to begin designing a town they plan to call, if an overlay zone is approved, Cedar Crest. On the phone with me, I have the spokesman for the Cedar Crest Overlay Committee, Mike Crittenden. Good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning.
So is this the same group of residents who proposed incorporating Hoytsville last year as well as annexing into Colville back in 2017?
The answer to that is no. There have been three sets of moving parts over here in this area. One was an annexation application, one was a move to incorporate, and then the third was the county's code revision that's been going on since about, well, actively since 2016. So specific to your question, this group filed to annex, well, about 920 acres of this group filed to annex into Colville in July of 2017. And after about a month of each party assessing each other, it just was clear that that wasn't going to work for either side. As a response to that, there was a group of people who, I'm just guessing, didn't like the idea of Hoytsville, half of Hoytsville becoming Colville, and they began an incorporation process. This group of landowners were not involved in that, and I don't know of any of the landowners involved in this village overlay that supported incorporation.
So this overlay proposal is before the Summit County Planning Office now. What is it that you're asking for?
We're just basically utilizing a provision in the code. The code went through a three-year intensive rewrite. The village overlay is one of the provisions within the code, and it's a group of landowners filing application to access the provision to that code.
And how did you come up with the property boundaries of this overlay? I mean, did you go neighbor to neighbor to ask them if they wanted to be part of it?
No, this is just people that we've known for the last couple of years that are interested in doing something else with their land. So it's just it's inclusive of people who are interested in doing something. And there was no, as you say, going door to door, there was none of that.
Yeah, I mean, if there was somebody, though, that wanted to be part of this, I mean, is that still possible here?
Yeah, it's a very interesting process, Leslie. So within the village overlay, I don't know how deep you want to get into it. I can certainly go as deep as you want, but just at the surface level, there's a boundary that's determined by the county council, and that was done a couple of months ago, back in May. So there's a plus or minus 20% attached to this boundary, so up to 20% can either exit or enter without the council needing to readdress the boundary to see if it still meets the purposes of the original application.
Okay. So I guess why is an overlay necessary? I mean, couldn't folks just come in as individual property owners perhaps and ask for conditional use permits to get maybe what you want?
No, a conditional use permit has nothing to do with an individual landowner. But I'm glad you brought that up, because what you're faced with, that would be a nightmare scenario for the county, for service providers, for pretty much everyone involved. It would just perpetuate and exacerbate the current land use build-out that I'm not sure most folks are happy with, linear build-out along roads and things like that. So if you don't do something like a village overlay, then you'd have 28 individual landowners coming in with 28 individual applications that the county would need to process. And then we'll all be arm wrestling for the two or three water rights that we could get from the local water company or drilling wells. And then you've got the whole back end situation. What do you do about sewer, which you have issues with septics? I think people on the west side are familiar with that issue. If septic's failing, you have to retrofit sewer systems into already developed areas. So that's a really hodgepodge approach, and it's based on who the next person to walk through the door is. This is a master planned approach where landowners have said forever with zoning, and zoning is very arbitrary. You put a number to land, you say, okay, you get this many units per density for your land, and over there you get X amount of units of density for your land. We've always contended over here that it should be based on really resources and the science of the deal. If you've got wet water, if you have the ability to deal with wastewater, if you have ingress and egress, and you can put roads in and move people around, that's really what should drive this. And the village overlay addresses that.
Okay. So you'd mentioned it's kind of like an MPD. Can you give us kind of the boundaries? I mean, are there some landmarks that people might be aware of if you were to describe the boundaries of this overlay?
Well, I do my best. There's a lane in Hoytsville called Creamery Lane that, if you're traveling on the interstate, leads up to the Hoytsville Church. That's more or less towards the southern end of the boundary. It would be to the west side, excuse me, the east side of the interstate, and it would pretty much incorporate all of the ground, the raw ground, from there towards Colville.
Okay. And would this then overlay provide, or this MPD then provide, a sewer system for future development?
Well, that's all part of it, and I need to clarify one thing. An MPD is different than the village overlay. So an MPD is a master plan development. That's an individual action. Once you move past four lots, that triggers the MPD, and you go through another process at the county. The village overlay, this is really I don't know how to put words to it. I'm going to compliment Pat Putt at the county. This is really an answer to what landowners need to be able to try to plan something that's valuable moving forward. And the concept is, and what we've all agreed as landowners, now we have a boundary. People may have a little bit of difficulty getting their heads around this, but we've all entered into this, and then we've had to agree that we're dissolving for the purposes of planning the inner boundary. So there's no, I'm going to have mine, you're going to get yours. There's no personal interest on the inside of this boundary. So basically you dissolve for the purposes of planning the interior boundaries, and you put things where they need to go. And then there need to be infrastructure enough to support it. At some point there'll need to be capital come in to support that infrastructure. But we're just setting out to plan something that's kind of combines the best of both worlds, where you have modern life with amenities people like in a rural setting.
So if you have 100 acres and I have 50 acres, how is that then, how does that become equitable?
Well, that's really interesting. So how this process goes is there's the general plan and there's the code currently. So as part of this process, working hand in hand with the county, we'll establish where things should go, and there might be zones that need to be created that don't currently exist to support what's needed, for example. So you basically plat this thing out, but at the end you don't record a plat. What you do is convert that to, and I'm not a planner, but they use the term ERUs, which are basically entitlements. And then those entitlements are included on an overlay map, so then there's a land plan attached to the development code that describes this area. And then there's an overlay map that's laid over the current area, and that would include the zoning for those individual parcels. So they'd be, they'd have the entitlements they have when the process is over. But the interesting thing about this is zoning comes on the back end.
Yeah, so, I mean, is there a way to compare what is allowed now with the existing zoning as opposed to what you could maybe receive under the village overlay? I mean, in terms of the ERUs, the density?
Well, there's an assumption there's going to be more than what there is now, because you need that density in certain pockets to drive the ability to put in the infrastructure, because infrastructure costs money.
Right, but we have no idea of knowing that until a plan is laid out?
When it's done, yeah.
Yeah. What does the current zoning actually allow for now?
Oh, it's a mix. There's 1-5 with an opportunity to rezone, 1-10, 1-20, 1-40. I think all of those are included in this boundary.
Yeah. And so that's where things get difficult. If you own 18 acres, you can't do anything.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to compliment the county council. This is a tough process, and they came up, I think, with the best they could using traditional zoning. It's probably more comprehensive than we would have come up with on our own over here. But even with their best efforts, a traditional zoning, one to this, one to that, one to whatever, is still going to drive those development patterns that end up with a build-out down the road that's not favorable, that requires a lot of retrofitting of resources and, you know, sewer and those types of things. It gets to be very expensive. I think they're going through that in Hidden Cove right now with a sewer retrofit, if I understand it correctly. So the idea of something like this, instead of, and you know, in their wisdom, Pat developing this and the council, the planning commission first, and then the council approving it and then implementing it in the code, it makes it possible that if a group of people want to work towards a common goal, you can actually come up with something better than you could before.
So basically this overlay, you remain in Hoytsville, right?
Well, Hoytsville is just a large geographical area.
It's not incorporated.
We don't own the name Hoytsville, so we call ourselves Cedar Crest Village.
Which would not be incorporated, correct?
That would, at the end of this, it would still be unincorporated Summit County, right?
Right. And so what is it that you're looking for? I mean, are we talking all residential development, or would there need to be some commercial to make it viable? Or?
Well, the idea is you have a sustainable community that can provide work opportunities, living opportunities, all those things. Now, it's interesting. We had a mapping exercise last night with the landowners, so we made a list. We've been working on this for a couple of months. There's been 4 meetings of the committee, the full committee, and 1 site visit where we flew a drone, and there's footage available that shows this area. But last night, the landowners got together and basically listed the types of development that we think we need here. One of the problems we have is we're exporting our kids. If everyone on the phones or on the radios, they know what land costs in this part of the world. Our kids leave, they can't come back, either through zoning or the property's too expensive. So there's got to be opportunities for people to come back and get a footing. And not just that, but other people that might like a lifestyle out here that's, I don't know, if we'll call ourselves mountain living for the 99% or whatever you want to call it. But we sat down and we listed, we want cradle-to-grave options. We want apartments, duplexes, townhomes, condos, single-family housing, co-housing, ranchettes, retirement facilities, all those sorts of things are appropriate for this sort of a village. So last night we had a mapping exercise on where do we think those types of things should go.
Okay.
And then besides that, you got restaurants, markets, gas stations, and work areas, you know, commercial zone, where should that be? So really, everything you have in a town.
Yeah. So do you have
like seeing this town, and then do we have the resources to support it? Where should it go? Then how do we get it built? So that's where we're at.
Yeah. So do you have a timeline on this?
When it's done.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's going a lot faster than any of us would have thought. We're already drawing lines on maps. So.
Okay. And as I was kind of trying to check the board, I may have missed what you had to say. How many property owners are we talking, and how many acres?
28 property owners, 1,100 acres.
Okay.
At this point.
Okay. So what happens next here? I mean, is it just kind of a planning exercise at this point?
No, I guess it is. Technically, it is a planning exercise that we hope leads to something really good for a lot of people. So we meet every 2 weeks, and everyone's bought in, and the progress has been pretty rapid. You know, we start with the typical stuff. You do a SWOT analysis. What are the strengths, weaknesses of the area? What are the opportunities? Figure out what you can support. Next, we'll catalog our resources, water, those types of things.
Okay.
And then we just keep planning, and at some point, we hope capital, you know, patient money shows up, and we just keep working at it.
Okay. Hope to check in with you again, Mike. Thanks for your time this morning.
You bet.
It's 8:30. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council meets twice this week, this morning at the Park City Library for its mid-year retreat, and then tomorrow for its regular meeting to discuss Park City's visioning process, housing, and more. In the studio with a preview, I have Park City Manager Diane Foster, along with David Burrell from Future IQ. That's the consultant for Park City's visioning 2020 process. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
So the first item on the council retreat, Diane, deals with Visioning 2020. It looks like it's going to be a month-long process, starting with a survey that recently wrapped up and then continuing this week with some in-person input sessions. Maybe you can say, what is it that we're trying to discover?
Sure, and it's actually a six-month process, so we're just getting started, although we're off to a really fast start. And as you know, the council wants to update the 2009 visioning, and so that was the last time we did it. We think that there are probably a lot of things about the community that people still care about, some of the core values and those types of pieces, but it's time to do a check-in and find out what's changed, you know, who's changed, and where does the community want to go in the future. And I think that's we got a lot of responses for the RFP, and one of the outstanding pieces that we saw with Future IQ and David and Celine and their company was their focus on what kind of future do we want to create so we can actually live into it.
Yeah. So, I mean, David, don't we kind of already know what people want, because the council has already identified its critical and top priorities?
Well, that's right. There has been a lot of work, and this is a community that obviously does plan and has done a number of visioning iterations every decade. But I think, as Diane said, we're in a world where things are changing much faster. And so the world 10 years ago, and you know, since then, when a lot of those critical priorities were established, the world was different to what it is today, and the world's certainly going to be different in 10 years' time. So this is one of those once-in-a-decade kind of reset. So it's a chance to sort of go, okay, what are the emerging sort of trend lines that are impacting our future? And if you just take a simple issue, just look at demographic change. In the next 10 years, we're going to deal with a massive change in terms of baby boomers cycling out of primary roles in society and the following generations moving in, bringing whole different sets of societal values. So this visioning process is trying to think about and anticipate some of those, and really have the locals be able to position this community to be as successful in the future as it is now.
So the survey is complete. I mean, have we ended the survey, or is there still an opportunity to?
Yes, so there'll be a number. As Diane said, this is a seven-month process. We are very interested in widespread engagement. That's something that the council's really been keen on. The process we have will have lots of opportunity for people to have input. So the survey you're referring to is actually going to be one of several surveys we'll do. So it's a community survey is what we're calling it. It's looking at key factors and people's reaction to those. How well is Park City doing according to a number of key issues? We have about 530 people have already completed that survey. That'll be open through until probably towards the end of the process. We want to allow that opportunity for people to keep having input. But of course, yesterday and the day before, we started the bigger process, which is that deep dive into thinking about different possible scenarios for the future. And we're going to ask the community to have detailed interaction and reaction to those futures.
Yeah. I saw some photos that were posted on Facebook of that meeting kind of happening, and it was the same old faces that we always see. How is it that we're going to get some new blood in here?
I think as you heard David say, and the council has very much said, we want to hear from everyone. So there'll be targeted efforts at specific groups, in addition to lots and lots of opportunities, including opportunities this week for the public to come to us, but we'll also be going to people. There'll be neighborhood meetings. We heard from the visioning 20 years ago that people really like the neighborhood meetings, so our council and David and Salim will be going to our community and having meetings with folks. So it's very much designed to hear all of the voices, including voices from people who don't live within city limits.
Yeah. Nearly 24% of Park City's population identifies as Hispanic. Any particular sessions being held to reach that population?
There will be ones that are specifically focused on Spanish-speaking individuals. And I think you probably know Enrique Sanchez, who works in our police department. We've also recently hired him. He's now a full-time city employee and working with Jed Briggs. He'll be part of some focused neighborhood and living room meetings with folks from the Latino community.
So did we offer the survey in Spanish?
Yes, it is available in Spanish, yes.
Okay. And can you kind of give us an idea of some of the general trends we're seeing from the responses, the 500 responses we've seen so far?
Yes, we can. So we're still obviously just starting to look at that data. But there's a couple of things that really jumped out to me in our first look at it. And we do this type of visioning work with a lot of similar successful communities, right? So some of my comments are specifically about the data and some are, you know, in the background as a little bit of a comparison, is one of the things that really jumped out is that people mostly viewed Park City doing very well against the important issues, both that are important now and will be important in 10 years. So there is a sense of success that was apparent, right? And that was a number of critical issues, you know, scored very well in terms of this is really important and we're doing a good job on it. And if you look at the critical priorities that the council established, which you mentioned earlier, a number of those issues are embedded in those critical priorities. I think we'll start to see sort of a broader sort of a divergence of views as we get into the analysis and we start to look at different cohorts. So, for example, one issue that is perhaps not being performing as well as some of those issues is around affordable housing, and that you could understand that. I mean, this is a very successful community and there's pressure on property prices. So that was one that was sort of not quite as high in terms of how well we're doing. And it certainly scores a little bit lower in some of the minority groups, such as the Hispanic population. But obviously, as we get more data in, we'll be able to understand that a bit better.
Yeah. So in 7 months, what do we get from IQ?
Yeah, so there's a lot of output in this process, right? And this is a really big, important conversation, right? So part of what we're trying to really help the community work through is that real sort of deeper thinking about, well, what do we want our future to look like and how do we fit into a world that's emerging around us? Because how the future turns out here will be a function of the decisions this community makes that gets executed by the staff and the council in the city and other organisations. But there is also the world around us that's changing. And so we have to take into account things like, you know, climate change is an obvious one because that's going to affect us all. But the way, even in the US and across the world, people are starting to concentrate into mega cities. You see Salt Lake City growing. You see the airport development there. And now what might be the implications of that? You know, you can think about societal values changing. You think about technology. What's the impact of autonomous vehicles and those type of technologies? Now, because transportation is a really big issue on people's minds here. So the debate is, well, you know, a traditional solution might be make the road wider, but a future-based technology solution might be to think about how some of those new opportunities help us solve some of those long-standing problems. So we're going to work through a lot of that deeper thinking. At the end of the process, to answer your question in terms of what the community will get out of it, will be a very clear consensus-based vision about what direction this community wants to head and what type of characteristics and values this community wants to preserve. And then there will be the basis of a strategic action plan. So we want to understand what are those strategic pillars that are going to drive this community in that preferred future.
Okay, so it's not just wish list making.
This is a long way from wish list. And I have seen a lot of processes which can be wish list processes. And they always leave me a little bit disheartened because you create expectation, which, you know, doesn't necessarily get fulfilled. And they're often poorly informed wishes. So we want to have a very intelligent and thoughtful process that really taps into the deeper thinking of the community in this process.
Okay, we have two more input sessions today, 4:30 to 6 at Old Town Cellars there on Lower Main Street, and then tomorrow, 8:30 a.m. at Lucky One's Coffee, if people are interested. Let's turn really quickly to another retreat agenda item, is the Military Installation Development Authority. No staff report available for this one, Diane. Has the city, really, you haven't commented much on the resort development that's happening just on the other side of the hill.
Mm-hmm. It's very much something that we're watching. You know, MITA has been a partner of the city and a good supporter of the city for many years. You'll remember that they were planning on building an 800-room hotel right by PC Hill, and that the impact of that to the city would have been significant. And they were great to be willing to look at, and I think the opportunity is better for the military folks over at Jordanelle, where there's both water and skiing. And so what we'll be hearing from Paul Morris, who I don't know if he's formally the executive director, or I think he maybe is, he has many years the interim executive director of MITA, and he'll be talking to the council about where they are in their projects as well as some of their plans. And the other thing is as we've been looking at the Hideout proposal, you know, we've heard certain things about MITA's involvement or not involvement, and MITA had sent a letter to Hideout saying they didn't want to be they didn't want land that they're on to be part of the hideout annexation. So that's also of interest to the council.
Yeah. As a state authority, MIDA doesn't play by the same rules as in annexation as municipalities do. And being that Bonanza Flat is in unincorporated Wasatch County, any concern that that could be included in MIDA's project area as well?
You know, MIDA, as you said, MIDA has a lot of power, and they have a good ability to make changes every year at the state legislature. You know, they have taxing authority. They have different rules to play by with annexation. So we very much appreciate the good relationship, both with Paul as well as with Jerry Stevenson and also Stuart Adams, who not only is the president of the Senate, but is also the head of the MIDA board for many years. And so those folks have been, we've had a good relationship with them. So we're very much going to be and have been watching what's going on.
All right. Council also discussed housing at the retreat. Housing manager Jason Glidden pointed out at the open house with 100 Marsac that the council has a housing resolution. Are we talking about any policy changes to that?
I think the biggest new thing that we'll be talking about in more depth is you've heard that council has an interest led by Becca Gerber in affordable rentals, and our Nate Rockwood has figured out how to fund those with bonding and repaying the bonds with rents. So they'll be taking a deeper dive. In fact, I was reviewing the slide presentation last night, and they had the most number of slides were about the rental model. So that'll be really interesting. And we know that's very interesting to folks around the community. David ran a session the other day with a number of city council and county council members with the seniors, and we heard from a doctor who moved from Oregon, and she used to live in Park City, and her rent got raised by $900 a month. That was a $900 increase, and she had to move to Heber, and she's a doctor. So the, you know, rental market is an important one, and it's not, you know, it's not, I don't think it's the stereotypical resort lifty. I think we're talking about community members who don't have a place to live.
Let's see. The regular meeting, I just wanted to bring up that the council will be hosting a public hearing for the proposed use of the Bonanza Park office space by the singer-songwriter collective Muse PC. This is something that was brought back to the council, at which the group had announced they had use of the space. So what, were we going back to square one here?
No, this isn't going back to square one. At the time, Nate was checking in to, when we first brought it to council, checking in with council to see if they wanted to go in that direction. Nate then went and met with all the folks in the who have offices in that building, in that temporary space. And so he went and did that. We also, by state law, needed to conduct a study, which was noticed July 17th. And now we're just going through this is actually just a formal approval of the lease.
Yeah, I guess there was some concern, again, with the tenants paying rent and these folks coming in for free. Are we going to charge the PC Muse, or it'll still be a free space?
It'll be a free space, and it turns out the biggest concerns were around noise and parking, and so those folks, I believe, actually we've heard from them that they are pleased with what the answers are. And also, the Muse group moves into this space, we'll be making sure that they follow noise, et cetera. But this is why it's really exciting is that this is the group that will likely have a function in the Arts and Future Arts and Culture District. So we get to kind of try out the Arts and Culture District before it gets built.
Okay. Diane Foster and Dave Rural, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:45. It's 8:45. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the U.S. Census Bureau estimates that more than one in every 10 residents of Wasatch County identifies as Latino. One local organization looking to represent the community and its needs. Joining me now, I have Yuri Jensen of the Wasatch Latino Coalition. Good morning, Yuri.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, so I just quoted the Census Bureau, and I'm guessing that's probably numbers from a decade ago. Do you think that the Latino population is still just 10% of Wasatch County, or has it grown?
Well, I can tell you that the Latino community that we're serving in the areas, I'm representing Wasatch County Family Clinic, it's about 45%. So there is more Latino, and our community keeps growing.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the Wasatch Latino Coalition is and what your mission is?
Yes, I would like actually to start with the vision. We created this vision as the Latino Community Coalition was reborn this year in March. The vision is an empowered, integrated, and thriving Latino community in which all contribute to the well-being and development of Wasatch County. And speaking about the mission, the coalition's mission is to connect families with resources and advocate for the greater impact through education, collaboration, and the engagement of the Latino community. So yes, indeed, it envisions the future of an empowered, integrated, and more inclusive life for everyone in Wasatch County.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it a membership-based, or how many people participate in the coalition?
Right now we have about 15 members. Everybody's welcome. And some of them are representatives from different organizations in the area, including Wasatch County Library, Wasatch Mental Health, Heber City Police Department, Wasatch School District, People's Health Clinic, the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office, Christian Center of Park City. We have also local religious groups, local entrepreneurs, and also community volunteers and many other organizations.
Yeah. So the reason you thought it needed to be formed, because you've got this growing population, and there, you didn't feel the inclusion that you want to? Or just
No, I knew that there's a lot of people who want to be involved. We have been asked, like, how can we serve the community better? And I'm talking about these representatives, these members who have these leadership roles. And I just start, you know, asking them if they would like to join me in this new adventure and together gather the needs and understanding what the community wants to make sure that we help them have a bright future.
Yeah. So what are some of the projects that you're working on then?
So actually today we're going to start for the first time in the county providing Spanish Love and Logic classes, which are parenting classes. That will be held at the health department, and they're from 6:30 to 8 p.m. There are only 4 classes, so we'll have it today, August 4th, 14th, and the 21st. Coming up, we also are going to host the first Latino night at the Concerts at the Park in Heber City. So we are excited for that one. We have a lot of resources that we want to provide to the community. We want to also make sure that they feel welcome and included. I noticed when I moved here last year, I noticed that there was, the community, they were not as engaged. They were everywhere, right? You can see families going everywhere, but there's still a miscommunication, and we're trying to make sure that we close that gap. On that night, we're also going to provide prizes. We have a folkloric group, Quetzalcoatl. So we hope that not just the Latino community enjoys that, but everybody, because we believe that we're rich in diversity, and we want to make sure that they people from Wasatch County also gets to know us, to understand us, to take a little bit about the culture and traditions the Latino community has home.
Yeah. My understanding that you are administering a survey at the Concerts in the Park. What are you asking?
The intent, we were working on the needs of the community, but with this survey, we actually can hear from them what they want based on age groups. I can talk about like the whole family, single parents, parents or families who have documents or no documents. We want to gather all that information. So far we have, based on the members' experience and perspective, we know that transportation is a huge need, education, literacy, English classes, affordable housing, youth support services, and many others like financial resources, employment, counseling, communication, resources about victims, for victims. And we want to make sure that we prioritize what is the need and start working with that so we can serve them better.
Yeah. So the survey, is it ongoing, or are you going to just kind of close it down and then publish the results somewhere?
Yeah, we that night, wherever we gather, we're going to work on it. And yes, we are in working in collaboration with the Wasatch Caring Community. And through them, we're going to be able to gather that data and then publish it.
Okay. When do you think that'll happen?
We're hoping in 1 month or two at the latest. We meet every month. Every month, and you're welcome to join us. The next meeting is on August 20th. And the meetings are held monthly to just to make efforts to address the needs and the of the local Latino community.
Okay. And where do you meet and what time?
So the next meeting is going to be on August 20th at noon at the Wasatch Health Department, Conference Room A.
Okay. All right. And then is there a schedule of the meeting somewhere? Where could people find more information if they wanted?
Yeah. If you would like to be involved, just get more information. We have a Facebook page. It's Wasatch Latino Coalition. That's how you can find us. And if you are interested also in participating, send us information. Or if you want information, you can contact us at WasatchLatinoCoalition@gmail.com.
Okay. Hey, Yuri, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
All right, good work. KPCW News Time now, 8:53. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, coming up Thursday, August 15th, just before school starts, Connect Summit County and Communities That Care hosting Middle School 101, What Every Parent Should Know. In the studio with details, I have Ben Belknap. He's the Park City School District's Wellness Director and a member of this panel. Good morning to you, Ben.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So as I mentioned, it's August 15th. What time and where?
So it's going to be August 15th at 6 p.m. at the Park City Library, specifically in the Santee Auditorium.
Okay. And you've got yourself on the panel. Who else?
So I'm actually going to be mostly moderating the discussion. And we have a variety of people on our panel. We have Julian Kaufman, who has expertise in this kind of sports world of physical sports exercise to support mental and emotional physical well-being. We have Pamela Bello, who works with mental health in the community. We have some of our school counselors and school administrators. You know, just recognizing that it's kind of a tough transition to go from elementary to middle school, you know.
And what is that about, the transition?
Well, I think there's a variety of things. I think part of it is the age. You know, you're a little kid kind of moving into now transitioning from classes to classes. You got to give up your recess, which, come on, we all miss that a little bit. And, you know, going from this one or two teacher system where you have a really intimate relationship with your teacher, bigger school. And I know, you know, I'm sending a fifth grader to sixth grade this year, and it is a little nerve-wracking. You worry a little bit about, you know, your child being, you know, slipping through the cracks a little bit, just becoming kind of a number in a bigger pool.
Yeah. Anything in particular parents should watch for?
Well, I think the biggest concern, one of the biggest concerns parents have, and this is one thing we want to address in this on this evening, is as kids transition, the age difference from a sixth to a seventh grader seems a lot bigger than a year. And so not only is your body going through big changes, but your emotions are too. And a lot of parents are concerned about the introduction of even like substance abuse and that kind of stuff. Screen time, more kids have phones. Do we allow them on social media? How do we regulate that? Those seem to be the biggest concerns.
Yeah. So how is it going to work? You'll just introduce some topics, get some response from the panelists, and then kind of open it up?
That's exactly right. So we want to spend about 45 minutes just asking questions to the panelists, letting them discuss those things, and then for 25, 30 minutes afterwards, allow questions and open response, and just allow parents to air out those concerns that they might have and let these panelists use their expertise to hopefully put people's minds at ease and recognize that it's a really cool time too.
Yeah. Is it just for parents or should they plan to bring their middle schooler?
Let me back up. It is designed for parents, but I wouldn't discourage parents from bringing their students. I think it could be a really cool time for students to kind of have their minds set at ease too, because it's kind of anxiety provoking for them as well.
Yeah, and it might just be interesting to hear it firsthand, some of the changes they can expect.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I mean, it is kind of a special time, and I don't know that you guys have done something like this before. What's the thinking behind that?
No, we have not done something like this before, and I would love nothing more than to take credit as a school district, but I got to give all the credit over to Summit County Mental Wellness Alliance and Communities That Care. They've been wonderful partners, and they were the ones that actually put this together, and Mary Krista Smith contacted me months ago to participate in this. So we really appreciate it, and it's something we'd love to do in the future.
Okay. Again, it's happening on Thursday, August 15th, 6 o'clock at the Park City Library there at the Jim Santee Auditorium. You expect it to go on an hour and a half, 2 hours?
That's about what we're expecting, yeah. We'll wrap it up by 7:30.
Okay, yeah. Time well spent.
Yeah, I certainly hope so.
Okay, Ben, anything else you'd like to know?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.